Sean, the battle for first place, well, in the Western Conference divisions in general, is terrific. But I wanted to talk to you specifically about the Central Division. We're recording this Wednesday. The Wild play in Denver against the Avalanche tonight. Who wins the Central Division?
I've been on the Colorado bandwagon all year, and now you want me to jump off of it?
I didn't ask you to jump off of it. I asked you a specific question. Who wins it? You gave an answer. I wasn't asking you to jump off. Why would you jump off? You've been on it all year. I agree with you. Honestly, I'm going to argue for the Wild here, but I don't think you'd be wrong to say the Avalanche. The funny thing is neither one of us think Dallas, which is interesting.
I don't think Dallas wins. First of all, Colorado has the game in hand, which is huge. They lead Minnesota in goal differential, having played less games. They lead them in wins. Like, I just think they're in the driver's seat. They're playing confident. And not that Minnesota's not. Minnesota's what, 7-1-2 in their last 10 games? Like, that's great. Like, if you play that level of hockey, you should be sitting in your locker room and being like, we're good boys. And then they look down and 9-1. That's what Colorado is in their last 10 games. Injuries, goaltending, it doesn't matter. They just win.
All right. So true, but so do the Wild. You go back 20 games, they're 15-1-4. In their last 20 games, right? And they've played a number of these games now. I think it's 9, right? Without Kirill Kaprizov. And they're scoring over 4 goals per game. Matt Boldy, man. Matt Boldy would be going after the Rocket Richard trophy if the season was shrunk to 9 games. You know, it's obviously not. But I like the Wild for these reasons. I like the Wild because of their goaltending, which has been terrific with Gustafson and Fleury. I like the Wild because they are getting contributions now without Kaprizov in the lineup that should fuel confidence for the rest of these guys when he does come back. For the longest time, it was Kaprizov and everybody else. And now without Kaprizov, other guys have had to step up, Boldy being the most obvious of those players, and maybe taking some ownership of the offense on this team and realizing that they can do it. And if they can get Kaprizov back before the end of the regular season, and I don't know that he comes back before the end of the regular season, but if he can get him back, you'll get him back rested, and you'll have other guys who are flying and confident on a team that's winning with great goaltending, a defense that's solid. To me, it all adds up to finishing first in that division. Now, you can make the same case probably for the Colorado Avalanche, which is why it's so interesting to me that the Wild and the Avalanche play tonight as we record this Wednesday, that they play this game tonight. And in my mailbag this week, I said the winner of this game wins the division, which may be a little bit premature to say something like that, but sometimes we got to go bold, right?
Look, Colorado has the best player at every position.
Do you think they have the best goalie?
It's close. I would say it's a toss-up.
Maybe. But one thing that we've seen, if from at least Marc-Andre Fleury, as we've seen him play in big games down the stretch.
I want to make it clear here. I love the Minnesota Wild.
Right, I know.
They're one of my favorite teams. I covered them in the playoffs last year. I think they have an excellent team. You were talking about the equivalent of the Tampa Bay Lightning here in the Colorado Avalanche. They've won. They have the best player at every position, and they know how to do it, and nothing phases them. Minnesota got phased last year. They ran into a hot goaltender in the playoffs, and they got phased. And then, because they didn't have a goaltender that they completely believed in, that was their true number one, they got into musical goalie chairs, and it got them in trouble. They got the same issue this year. Who's their goalie? Is it Marc-Andre Fleury? Does he start the playoffs and then has a bad game, and now you're like, oh, I think I'm going to go with Gus. He's been really good. Chaos.
Fair point. No, you're right about that. I can't argue that. I mean, it is fair, and it's got to be coached the right way, and it's got to be communicated the right way, too. That one's interesting. By the way, before we move on, Sean, let's mention this. We have Paul Maurice coming on with us. We actually, today's Wednesday, as we record this, we spoke to Paul Maurice Tuesday. He was in Toronto. They were getting ready to play the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Florida Panthers getting ready to play the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight. They've lost 4 games in a row. They sit in 3 points back right now with the Pittsburgh Penguins for the second wild card spot in the Eastern Conference. So Paul Maurice, really good, joined us for about 20 minutes, so that's coming up here shortly. But back to the Central, there's a couple other things here, Sean. So we can argue about the Wild and Avalanche, but I think we both will agree that if either one finishes first, it would, you know, you know, wouldn't be necessarily a surprise for either one to do so. It's the value of finishing first in that division, because that avoids, now you're going to play a tough team no matter who you play. I get that. That's coach speak. That's what these guys all talk about. But are you kidding me? Do you think you want to play the Dallas Stars in the first round of the playoffs? Or do you want to play the Seattle Kraken or the Winnipeg Jets or the Calgary Flames or the Nashville Predators? You want to play a team in Dallas that has been in first a lot of the year in that division with excellent goaltending, depth, scoring, good coaching, a coach, by the way, who takes his team to the Stanley Cup final in the first year of every time he does, you know, goes to somewhere, or at least deep in the playoffs? Or do you want to play a team that's reeling in Winnipeg, a team that doesn't have good goaltending, and really a go-to scorer in Seattle, a team in Calgary that's been so up and down this season, or potentially Nashville? If they can get there, they'd be getting there with a hot goalie, and that's pretty much the reason they would get there, right? You want to finish first in this division. There's other divisions where you're like, we're in, we're feeling pretty good, everything's okay. You want to finish first in the Central Division.
Look, I don't know if Winnipeg makes it, but if they don't and Calgary does, I'm jumping through hoops to play Calgary.
Yeah.
They've gone from like a 10% chance of making it to 35, and it's because Winnipeg has played so poorly the last little while. They can't get on a streak. They've lost two games in a row. They're 5-5 in their last 10. Like, Connor Hellebuck can't help them anymore. And he's been bad at times now, like, because he's one of those workhorses. You know, we're going to talk to Paul Maurice, and he talks about that a little bit with Sergei Bobrovsky and what the Panthers have run into. The Jets have kind of run into the same thing. So, you know, I don't know if they hold on. They have a 2-point lead now on Calgary, and they have a 3-point lead on Nashville, who beat the President Trophy elect in the Boston Bruins. Well, they're not elect anymore. They've actually won the election before April. Only the early voting counted, and we don't even have to go to the actual paper ballots. They just beat them 2-1. Pretty much that's their game plan right there. You saw the playoff Nashville Predators last night. And before we go any further, let me just say this. What John Hines and Roman Josi did last night, if people haven't seen it, was amazing. So they win that game 2-1. They're in their locker room. They have, I guess it's a fighter helmet, like a fighter jet helmet. It's got like the weird, it might be a motorcycle helmet, I don't know, but it's one of those trinkets that every team
maybe
has.
Like a race car helmet or something. Like,
they give out. It's very colorful and whatever. And Roman Josi's hurt, and so John Hines made a nice speech about how proud he was of the team, how the city was proud of him because they played in the wake of the horrendous shooting in Nashville this week. And then Roman Josi got up, and he was supposed to give the helmet to the MVP of the game, and that's kind of how they do it. And then the next game, the person who holds it would give it to whoever he chose as a successor. And instead of doing that, Roman Josi took the helmet, gave a beautiful speech, and said, I'm going to put this on the table. This is for the city of Nashville. This is for the first responders. This is for the victims. This is for the survivors. And if you haven't seen the video, it's on the Nashville site. It's on Nashville Twitter. Go see it. It's a really touching moment. And when people wonder about sports and what they mean to a community, there's Exhibit A.
Yeah, there's the intersection, right? There's the intersection between sports, professional teams or college teams, and the communities that they play in and play for and live in. That's the thing also, people that don't quite, they sometimes forget that these guys live in these communities. And Roman Josi has lived in Nashville for a long time and played there for a long time. It's his home. It was a real touching moment. I did watch it actually before we started recording this today. And I'm glad I did, because if I hadn't watched it and you brought it up, I'd be looking at you like, what are you talking about? So now I'm very happy that I did.
You usually look at me that way, so it's okay. I get used to it.
I know. And it was a big moment for the Nashville Predators. I'm not just that moment in the locker room after the game. It's a big moment to go in there and beat the Boston Bruins the way they did 2-1. You can't survive on 2-1, man. You're not going to make it on 2-1. You know, you're not going to continue to make it on 2-1. And a funny thing is that of all the teams we're talking about here, we start with obviously Colorado and Minnesota and Dallas. We talk about Winnipeg. We talk about Nashville and Calgary. The Predators have the best goalie of all of them, and very well could be the reason that they get in the playoffs. But yet another reason why I'm saying you got to finish first in the Central Division, because you want to play that team. You want to play the team that has to win 2-1, especially if you're a team that knows it can go out and score, whether it's Minnesota with or without Kaprizov, obviously the Avalanche and the Dallas Stars, who we're kind of putting to the side here because both of us are saying, not so sure that they can do it. Stars are only 1 point back, and they have more regulation wins than both the Avalanche and the Wild. So they can do it. They can have an opportunity to do it. You want to finish first. You want to avoid that 2-3 matchup. I think you could say the same thing, obviously, in the Pacific Division between Vegas and LA and Edmonton, which has come on, and not Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. We'll talk about him a little bit later with his 96 points. But, Sean, I wanted to go back to Winnipeg. And, again, we're going to have Paul Maurice on. He used to coach the Winnipeg Jets. So he knows what Rick Bowness is going through right now, because I think he went through it a few times with this team. I don't know if you saw the press conference that Bowness did after the game in San Jose, where they lose 3-0 to the Sharks. And he was honest. He even said, we have a lot of guys here who think they're giving everything that they got. They're dreaming. They're dreaming, he said. They're not giving it. He said, we have some guys who are, and other guys who have to pull it together and get on board as well. Mark Scheifele has not scored in 9 games. Blake Wheeler has not scored in 21 games. In fact, Bonus was asked a question about Dylan DeMello and what he said after the game. Like, they just have to, they got to keep, DeMello apparently said, like, you got to keep pouring pucks on net. Got to keep shooting, got to keep shooting. And then Scheifele said, apparently in the post game that he did, you know, I'm a guy who likes to hold on to the puck and look around and all that. And Bonus's reaction, I don't know if you saw it, Bonus's reaction kind of just threw his head back and was just like, hey, he didn't say anything, but you could just see his head going like, did he really say that? Are you serious? And it seems to me that might be the fight he's having with Mark Scheifele over the last several weeks here, and a reason why Scheifele's not scoring. But it looks like the coach is getting really fed up with the team. The team is not scoring. They cannot score right now. They're 3-5 in their last 8 games with 12 goals. 12 goals in their last 8 games, and they've been shut out 3 times. But I still think they get in. I still think they find a way, because I don't believe in Calgary, and I don't believe in Nashville.
Why did Paul Maurice quit?
Couldn't get through to the players anymore.
And it looks like that's where Bones is now.
And he's in his first year.
Yeah.
But this is the second coach in the second straight year where it's falling on deaf ears. So you have to question now, it's not the coach, right? Now it's not the coach, now it's on the players. And I think it should be on the players a lot of the times. So, you know, Bonus said, you know, he was asked a question last night, and he was asked after they lose 3-0 to arguably the worst team in the league, the San Jose Sharks, at least points-wise, they lose 3-0. They get shut out for the 3rd time in 7 games. And he was asked, you know, how do you get more out of it? How do you do it? And Bonus answered, like, at some point, your pride has to kick in. At some point, you have to be like, we need to do more here. We're capable of doing more. That's not coaching. These players have to be able to do it themselves at times too. They're professional athletes, right? They have to be able to get themselves up and to play and to be at their best now that they know they're in this fight. I mean, you look at Winnipeg. I did some stats before we did. Winnipeg was first in the Central Division with 59 points, 29-14-1 through 44 games. That was on January 15th. Since then, they are 12-17-2 in 30 games. And the only teams worse in that stretch since January 16th, Washington, Columbus, and San Jose. They're the only teams with a worse points percentage than the Winnipeg Jets. And here the Jets, they had a huge cushion. Now it's down to this minuscule 2-point cushion.
Two of those three teams are playing for Connor Bedard.
Correct.
That's the rate that they're playing at. They're playing at a lottery team rate. I think when you're an NHL coach, your job isn't to light fires. Your job's actually to put them out, right?
That's true.
With your players. Like, you want players that are on fire, right? That you don't know what they're going to do when they're put in a bad situation, right? That they're so prideful and they're so strong-willed that you have to break them. He's not breaking anybody. Like, he's literally throwing grenades into the locker room and saying, wake up, boys.
Yeah.
Like, get mad. Get mad at me. If that's what it takes, don't like me anymore. Like, it's kind of like the Bill Belichick. You want somebody to hate? I'll give you somebody to hate. But go out there and play and show me I'm wrong. When you get to the NHL, like, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to control players and make them more responsible. You're not trying to light them on fire and get them to go out there and do stuff. And that's what seems to be needed in Winnipeg, is to have these players. He talks about pride. Like, at some point when you're getting punched in the face, you punch back. You might lose. You might end up knocked down. But you punch back, so other people look at you and say, well, at least he gave it his all. Like, I don't know if you could say that about Winnipeg every night.
No, Well, and I think that's what he's talking about when he says, you know, they're dreaming, you know, that, that these guys think they're bringing it every night. There's some that are, but he was talked about how they're dreaming. Here's the other stat with that, Sean. Like in those two dates that I gave you, right, through January 15th, they're averaging 3.34 goals per game. Since, in the 30 games since, they're averaging 2.35. They've dropped a full goal per game just about. How does a team with Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, Kyle Connor, Josh Morrissey, and the likes of a few other guys, how do they not score at least three goals per game? Like, how do you get shut out three times in the last seven or eight games? To me, it's mind-boggling that this team should be built on its offense and great goaltending, and yet they're not generating any offense, and he can't lay it on the feet of Connor Hellebuyck. Connor Hellebuck's played more minutes than anybody in the National Hockey League this season. He is a workhorse, like you said, and he has been a driving force for them. He's a big reason, arguably the biggest reason, right, why they are even still in a playoff position. So you can't lay it at his feet, though sometimes he does have to be better, but he's played so much, and he needs to continue to play. He needs to continue to play because they are fighting to get into question with the Jets, though, is what if they don't? What if they don't make it this season? What happens then, right? Because they were pretty close. Remember, they were pretty close to thinking, I don't know if this core, about this core, the way that it works, if it's going to work for us. You know, there was questions about Scheifele, who is going to have another year on his deal, and Wheeler, another year on his deal. You know, and you have Dubois, by the way, who's going to be an RFA at the end of the season. What if they don't get in? Hellebuyck also one more year on his deal. What if they don't get in? I think we could see some significant changes in Winnipeg.
How could you not?
Yeah, but they should. The question is, will they? You know?
Well, that's what the next 2.5 weeks are for.
Right.
That's it. Going to be awesome.
It's true. Figure it out. Another team. And we'll, look, I mean, right before here, we get to this interview that we talked about with Paul Maurice, the Panthers, right? The predicament that they're in. They're not a team, I don't think, that if they don't make it would blow things up, because they sort of blew it up after being a President's Trophy winning team last year with the major changes that they made, bringing in Maurice, trading Huberdeau and Uyghur, getting Matthew Tkachuk. And what's funny for me, I don't know if it's funny for them, but it's interesting, at least for me, is that they won that trade and they still might not make the playoffs. And the other team might end up making the playoffs because of Winnipeg, right? Because of how Winnipeg has fallen. But they've clearly won that trade for how Matthew Tkachuk has been. Matthew Tkachuk should be in the Hart Trophy conversation, whether they get in or out, whether they make it or they don't. He should be in that conversation. He's the biggest reason why they're even in the position that they're in, I think, right now. And we touched on that with Maurice. You asked him a question about that. But it's interesting, right? Like, they win that big, massive offseason blockbuster, and they might not get in.
The Pittsburgh Penguins are doing everything they can to get Florida in.
Very true.
That game last night, like, I don't even know who the Pittsburgh Penguins are anymore, right? So I turn that game on and it's 3-0 Detroit, and I'm like, oh my God. But you talk about Winnipeg, they lose 3-0. Here comes Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
Bang, bang, bang. Three goals. 3-3. And they're buzzing. They get a power play because they challenge the third goal. They're buzzing. Then they give up a goal and you're like, oh my God, here we go again. Then they score and you're like 4-4 and you're like, wow, this team's finally figured it out. Like, here's what Bones is looking for in Winnipeg. Like, have some pride, fight mm-hmm. back. Don't lay down. They did all that. And then they make a silly turnover late in the game. David Perron, who hasn't scored in forever, finishes a hat trick and they leave the door open for the Florida Panthers to move closer. I think the Islanders now are that one wild card. I don't think there's any question about that. So it's just the two, and yeah. neither team wants to move into it. Maybe neither team wants to play Boston.
Would you?
Yes.
Well, it gives you a chance, right? I mean, it was almost like what Daryl Sutter said last year, right? What, you go play Colorado, you play four games, you play for another 8 days and you go home, right? Yeah. It's kind of like that. Yeah. You know, look, that game last night, although it ended up on, you know, whether they win or lose it, that's every game they play, the Penguins, it seems, is like, you know, a small version of what their season has been.
They're just chaotic. They're yeah. chaotic in their own end. Like, it's shocking. Mike Sullivan's such a good coach. They're so hurt on their blue line. Like, they can't defend.
They can't defend. They have two lines. Mikael Granlund hasn't done anything for them. They have two lines. They are leaving the door open for the Florida Panthers Speaking of which, let's finally get to that interview we did with Paul Maurice, the head coach of the Florida Panthers. Losers of four in a row right now, but he's still honest in the assessment, trying to keep things somewhat positive there, and believing they might still have a shot here. Here's that interview with Paul Maurice. Paul, thanks so much for joining us. Wish for you was on better circumstances, not a four-game losing streak, but how do you get out of it? What's the key thing here for you guys to get out of this and to really continue to fight and claw your way up those standings?
Yeah, good question. First, you got to look at how it happened, and we got into this playing very, very well. I think some of our strongest hockey of the year, but in truth, we had this unusual month where we spent an entire calendar month in an NHL season in the state of Florida. We played one road game, and that had, we had better jump than a lot of teams that we played, and then we're on the other end of that. Now we go into Philly on back-to-back on that first loss. I like that game on back-to-back. We played very well in it. I think their goaltender was first star. And then we played two games poor at home. And that's where it hurts you, because it's Toronto and New York at home. The home games are so important for teams in this fight. They've got to win their home games for sure. The game last night in Ottawa wasn't like the previous two. It was 5-on-5, our game. I liked the way a lot of guys kind of went outside their comfort zone. Barkov, especially physical in that game, a piece to his game that is not always there. And I don't need this guy to play like a fourth line tough guy, but he was in the game, and the piece of the game clearly that hurt us first would be our penalty kill, which struggled last night. And then the power play wasn't able to match theirs. So you start with your 5-on-5 game, and it was right last night. So that's the first piece. And then we've got to get those details, and you go into Toronto and then back into Montreal on back-to-back, which we like to do. So we're going to have to get that right.
Paul, how much of all of this is mental at this point, and especially for you as a coach, just to kind of drive that message home and keep hope alive? I mean, it seems like every day you pick up the standings, and it's not just you, it's any team. It was the Pittsburgh Penguins for a while. It's other teams. When you're living through a season like this on the bubble, how much of it is just keeping hope alive?
Yeah, all of it, but it has to be honest, because I mean, I think humans have an incredible sense of the truth. If you're standing in front of the room selling something that's not true, they won't buy it. You'll lose that hope. So we assess our games honestly. And so the Toronto Ranger game, rather, we just dealt with it. We just went through video and they responded, you know. So we'll do the same thing tomorrow. Like, I guess one of the messages is, after the Ranger game, they hadn't earned the right to be in a good mood or positive. It just didn't. So there's even in a difficult situation, we can't come to the rink and be casual about how we played and just say, okay, we'll get the next one. I get the idea of you're cutting off your losses, but you have to deal with them too. So same event last night. I thought Ekblad and Barkov had gotten to another level. Montour especially, we had some guys play really strong hockey, and then we'll deal with that tomorrow. That'll be where we get our energy from. We were right in a lot of parts of our game, and the effort was really high. So physically, you know what, everybody goes ups and downs. So we're in a real tough stretch of road games and back-to-back games right now. So no, we don't feel as fresh as we did 2 weeks ago, but that's the National League, so we've got to handle that.
I wonder, Paul, when, you know, last year this team was flying in the regular season, you weren't there, and they made some significant changes in the offseason, and reality hits you sometimes, right? I mean, you can be good, and yet you can change brings reality, and it takes time. You want to be in a better spot. You want to be in the top eight. You want to be in that position now. But the way the season has gone for you guys, does it surprise you that it's gone this way, or is it maybe a little bit expected because of how much change went on?
So I'm going to say both, and I'll try to answer that question as honestly as I can. It's been more extreme than I expected. We've had some challenges, and some of it, you know, isn't our doing. It was a tough schedule we had from, especially where we're located. We got ourselves, and we had played 34 road games, I think, at the same time Arizona did, and they didn't have a home building. I think it took its toll. Some of our injuries that you just can't control to our center ice position, it hurt us. Bill Zito knew exactly the challenges this summer, and that was the first part of our meeting, that this was going to be a potential sideways bill. They brought in a bunch of players at the trade deadline, and why wouldn't you? They looked like they were on a roll. It's just, there was a whole bunch of trades made this year, a bunch of teams loaded up. and only one of them is going to be right on those trades, right? So the cost is you add those players, but you certainly can't pay for them the next year and they move on. And then there's an understanding that we got to get to a completely different level of hard hockey here. We just do. So, and Dan, you've been around a long time. You've seen it in almost every skilled organization comes in and they're winning games and but it takes a long time before they get over that hump to exactly how hard you got to play every single night to truly be one of those contenders. Tampa's such a prime example of it. Had gotten to the finals on skill and then missed the playoffs and had a first round exit four straight to Columbus. And then the hard came into their game and they've been so very good. And I think we're in that, we're in that transition right now. We've got some good skilled players. So this is why it's exciting. Matthew Tkachuk's like 24, 25 years old, right? He's still a young man. I look at Ekblad. He's been in the league forever. He's 27. He's just coming into his prime. Barkov the same. So a lot of the major drivers are just, they've had success on some skill, a really kind of an unusual year. If you had the insider's explanation of the year, it wasn't 122 points. It was after Christmas. They beat all the bad teams and felt good, but didn't play well for 6 months going into the playoffs, and then it happened. The hard came into their game and you're out 4-0 Tampa. So Bill understood it. I think we both understood there was going to be some adversity just coming off 122 points, because that then is only your starting point, right? The only thing better than that is 123. After that, it's failure. But this has been extreme with the challenge of losing Spencer Knight has put an awful lot of pressure on Sergei Bobrovsky. So our goaltending was middling, well, not even middling for first 2.5 months of the season. And Sergei played very, very well for us, but we've also put him in a very difficult position. I think he's played 15 of the last 16 games and he's, and that's a challenge for any goaltender. So we've had some challenges for sure, but And this is truly, and I'm going to tell you the exact truth, this is truly not Pollyanna or me trying to put a spin on a bad situation. This team's got to get through that. They've got to go through hard. They do. And the top guys that are here that have scored goals, and it's not on the, they got to get harder, right? And then they are. We from January 2nd, since from the first period of our Ranger game, I think on January 2nd, we've been a pretty darn good team. And that's with Barkov out of our lineup, because they play way harder now than they did in the first half. I thought that started a month earlier, Dan, like in the early part of December. I thought we started playing a lot harder, but we played every second day and we were all over the earth. And you couldn't really tell because we were dragging our butts from town to town. But the most important thing that happens this year is they have understanding of how much harder we have to play to be considered a good team.
One person that you don't have to worry about playing hard is Matthew Tkachuk. He's having an MVP type season. I'm wondering if you can kind of shed some light on, we all see the surface, right? We see him make the big hit. We see him score the goal, but on exactly how important he is to your team and the transition you're talking about by setting an example of teaching other players what hard means. It doesn't mean running through people and taking penalties. It means something close to what Matthew plays.
Yeah, and I'll just add on that, because that's a really good point that you made. We're still at the point that we're taking penalties with hard. And you look at our stick infractions. So we're learning how to battle in the 5 foot area, and it's a learned thing. You have to learn to compete. Think of so many of these great young players who play on the perimeter. And I give credit to Austin Matthews here. We played him the other night, and he played in that front, and he drove hard. And that's a change in his game, as it is with all these young guys. They come in and learn. Matthew Tkachuk is... It's interesting. So I, in so many ways, I'm just a hockey fan. Like truly, you're a coach and you're there every day. But in so many ways, I get the same view of a player who doesn't play on my team that you guys do, right? You read the articles, you watch the game, you have an assessment of his player. He's been just a revelation in, first of all, I didn't realize how good his hands are. And you, I think you got to get on the ice with a guy and see it every day in practice and say, oh my God, he is just elite. With his ability to strip pucks, come up with pucks, knock them down, and I've never seen a guy. I've seen guys that are good at deflecting pucks, but I've never seen people. I swear he places them. So it's not just like a drag bunt. He's where he's trying to get the ball on the ground. He'll pick a corner with it. It is an awesome thing to see. The improvements that he's made in his game, and I'm going to say the maturation in his game. So there's a game, and I should have better stats for you. I don't follow this stuff that close. There's a game about 2-3 weeks ago where he took a bunch of penalties. And I think it's the lone game that he's taken penalties in the last month and a half. Nobody's really noticed that. But from a guy that spent first half a season in the box every night, he's just matured. He knows how valuable he is to the ice. He knows that we need him on the ice. He also knows that there's a lot of guys that kind of come in on that rough and tumble, and they want to make sure they get themselves some room and they play hard. And he can flip the switch pretty quick. But his game is matured, and now he's not in the penalty box at all. He doesn't take penalties anymore, really. And that's an important thing for us because it's the discipline thing for us, and we've got to get in that area. The last thing that I would say, maybe the thing that I enjoy the most is watching him interact with the people around him. And I'm talking about the bus drivers and the people that work in our locker room and the people that work on our airplanes, and certainly his teammates and the trainers and the coaching staff. It's also every day, right? I think there are stories, and you guys would know this, there's stories out of Winnipeg about his father doing things for people that needed help that nobody ever knew. And it doesn't fall far from the tree. Like, he has been a lot. He's just a great ambassador for our team and for the league. He plays an exciting game. He plays hard. He plays mean, but he treats the people around him with kid gloves. And that part's the part I think I enjoy the most about him, because I spent most of the first 5 years just swearing at him from the bench on the other team, you know, who's can't use the words, but to see him come in and be such a well-rounded young man and man, a superstar for a long time, it's coming.
Is he contagious? Do you think he's contagious to the rest of the team? And is that, maybe it catches on this year, but maybe it even catches on as the years go on?
Yeah, it catches on because he will morph and change as well. Right. So his discipline then will become our discipline. And he's a big gamer, right? Like, you can just see him walk around the room before the big game and he's got a smile on his face and he's ready. He's intense, but under control. He's a leader. The guy's a natural born leader. He's the leader that you want. You know, we've got some unique people in our room. Sasha Barkov is a fantastic captain. He's a very quiet man. He leads every day in his preparation and his work and his practice drive and all those things. And last night, I think it's the first time he put a player through the glass. So eventually he will lead with physicality. And Matthew and he are just fantastic drivers of our team.
I've always wondered this. Do you think, because he's so good, you talked about being good in the room and being good with the support people and everybody else. Do you think that's in part from an introduction to that culture at such a young age, you know, being around his dad, being in locker rooms since he was a little kid, playing with professional players when he was a teenager in the summer and things like that? Do you think that accelerates the whole process?
I think it is, and I don't have any proof, but I think it is absolutely a direct result of the way his father treated the people around him. The stories out of Winnipeg are that his dad was, he went above and beyond the support staff and people to the point that, you know, helping people financially that needed help. Now, I those aren't my stories to tell. And clearly, if they wanted them out there, they would have already been out there. He would have ran around and told everybody all the good deeds they were doing, but they don't. So it's not my place to say. But I think when you grow up at the knee of that, when you watch a star like your father treat the people as important in your life, that's what you learn. I think it's absolutely a direct result of the way Keith handled his room.
Well, I want to go back to the goaltending because you brought it up. Sergei Bobrovsky's had to play a lot of hockey of late just to help you guys get into this position to where you have a chance, really. And I wonder how you handle this as a coach with, what is it, 8 games left. You need to win them, and he's your best option. But you don't necessarily have the best chance to win when you're playing a tired goalie. So how do you handle this? You know, do you ride him? You know, or how much does he have a say in it? What's it like, you know, in dealing with the predicament you're in now?
So we would be more, if this goes a young guy that didn't have any experience in his body, we'd be more involved in directing him. But so what you don't know about Sergei Bobrovsky is he is this kind of preparer to the end. Like he knows his body as well as him. He knows when he's tired, he knows what's in, he knows what he needs in terms of work and rest. Like, there are some guys that are workers, and Sergei's a bit like this, that need to be on the ice every day, even when you know it's not the best thing, because it's almost a superstition. I got to go and I got to be on the ice every day. But he's aware of the load that we've put on. One of the things that mitigates all of this is, again, we were home, right? So he slept in his own bed for 4 weeks. Yeah. And we had, God, we didn't need it, but we had a 4-day block off, a 3-day block off, and now we're going to play, whatever, 10 games in 15 days. So you talk to him. You watch his performance. Like any great pro, they'll never take themselves out of a game, but they're honest about it. And then you don't make a decision necessarily for next week. So we would have a plan. You know, every month we sit down and talk about the potential plan, and it always changes somewhat. But we'll look at, we'll talk to him today, see how he's feeling. We'll talk to him again tomorrow morning. The expectation is that he plays tomorrow. And normally you wouldn't consider playing him back-to-back in this situation, but I can't say that that's off the table either. That is a possibility, but we won't deal with that. Workload last night, I mean, it was 25 shots. They didn't spend a lot of time on our end. They were heavy on the power play. So he was, you know, in the crouch, and he made a couple of great saves, but he wasn't overly burdened last night in the game. We would expect we're going to spend more time. He's going to be in that crouch more against Toronto. They're a good ozone time team, and he's going to have to be on. And then we'll just make that decision. I'm not ruling out he plays all eight. I don't think he will, Dan. I think it makes more sense just based on shots and goals against and the things that we're seeing that we do get him some rest. You know what? Yeah, our backups, Alex Lyon's been unusual to say the least. We fired him in and played him in six straight, and he got us a point in Pittsburgh. I mean, we lost 7-6. But we were playing back. We had three sets of back-to-back games in about 9 days. And his last win in the NHL was against Boston in overtime at home. And we were playing back-to-back. We'd played LA the night before. So that's a heavy, heavy game. And this guy went in and just battled. So his numbers suggest, you know, that he's a backup goalie for us. But his heart and what we've seen him do in the net has not been orthodox, but it's been effective. And he was a big part of us, you know, staying in the fight in a real heavy schedule.
Paul, I always count on you when I ask you stuff to enlighten me into things that I don't know. And when you explain this one, I can't wait to hear it. I've always thought that Brandon Montour would be a good player. Like, yeah, ever since I saw him at the very beginning, I'm like, oh, this kid, he's going to be an NHL defenseman. And he was decent. What's happened this year? Why is he the player he is now? I mean, in the year of great defensemen, he's lost by some of the other players that have played, but he's having right. an elite season.
Well, he's got, first of all, and this is not a newsflash, he is a brilliant skater, like truly incredible in change of directions and his acceleration. He's also an incredibly fit man. So he can play big minutes and he can skate. But here's what I think the difference is. He came into the league and that's what he did, right? He was a skater. He was an offensive defenseman, which is a very difficult thing to come early into the league into, unless you're either rebuilding as a team or the expectations aren't there. So at the, and I'm not a shot of the teams that he played for, but when you're chasing the game as an offensive defenseman, you're up the ice the entire time, in which case you almost never learn how to play defense. What's changed this year, and this is something that Rod Brind'Amour said to me. He was struggling at a stretch of time, and I think I had taken him off the power play. And he said, I need those power play points, because if I can just get one or two, then I don't have to worry about it 5-on-5. I don't feel like I got to chase the game 5-on-5. And he's such a great – so same concept with Brandon Montour. We felt we needed a right-handed shot that could skate on the top of the power play. And he comes up and we went 2-for-33 to start the season. But after that, our power play's actually been very good. When you sub out that section of the starter power plays, you know, 25%. And he's been a big part of that. And he is putting up numbers. So now he can just settle and play the game. The key to Brandon Montour's game is not more, it's less. And I'm not talking about not being up the ice all the time because it burns energy. He makes good reads. He doesn't cheat the game to get up the ice. He's just so damn fast. He can get up the ice all the time. In which case he's a playing rover. He's up and down the ice. So I think what's happened is he's generated offense on the power play. And he's also now elevated. He's on the ice, if this makes sense. He's on the ice to Tkachuk and Barkov. That builds confidence. I'm out with these guys. We're producing points. Now I'm not a 5-6 anymore, a guy that's in and out of lineup. I'm in the league. I'm legit. And there's a confidence that comes with that. You make a good play. You're tapping pads with the right guys. So he's settled his game 5-on-5 because he doesn't have to chase it. Those guys chase the game because that's how they stay in the league. It's a little bit like Anthony Duclair, right? He's a goal scorer. And right now he's struggling to score goals. So what will happen with those guys is every time they get on the ice, their entire game is about scoring goals. And which puts the coach puts you on the bench or he puts you in the stands because you can't play the other half of the game, which is important. So Brandon, I think, has just built a tremendous amount of confidence, earned confidence. from how hard he's played, how well he's played. The power play's been a driver in his overall confidence, and it settled his 5-on-5 game. And then I know I'm beating this to death, but I want to give you a full answer because we've thought about this. It's actually his partner. So Mark Stahl, and he's not 25 anymore, we all understand that. But Mark Stahl is an incredibly consistent game of hockey. Now, it doesn't look like it did before, but his game is the same every night. And he has a great comfort in that. And I think Brandon Montour is he's learned the value of that consistency from his partner. And it's been great for him.
Paul, I think we can end right there. That was a terrific answer on Montour. Great stuff, really. Gave us 20 minutes. Can't appreciate it anymore. We do. I mean, good luck with it. All right.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Great stuff there from Paul Maurice. Can't thank him enough for giving us the time. Again, that we did that interview Tuesday. That was yesterday. And they play in Toronto. Florida plays in Toronto tonight. They've lost 4 in a row. Real good stuff there, Sean, from Maurice. Let's move on to, in our neck of the woods, where we are, the New Jersey Devils and the New York Rangers. 2 points separate them. They're even in games played. They're even in regulation wins, which is the first tiebreaker. And, oh, by the way, they play each other at Prudential Center on Thursday night. What do you think? Rangers, Devils, battle for second place? Or can one of these teams push up and get first?
For loyal listeners of the program, I think it was last week. It might have been 2 weeks ago. I said that I'd be licking my lips to play the Rangers. Take it back. I'd be licking my lips to play the Devils right now.
How quickly it changes, right?
Well, it does change, right? I mean, they're kind of a mess.
Yeah. I mean, look, you look at the two teams and the way they're going right now, and it's a difference in games played that I'll give you here, but the Rangers are 9-1-1 in their last 12, you know, the last 11 games, right? They're even last night, I'm at the game at Madison Square Garden covering that game for us at NHL.com. They were horrific in the first period, except for about a 3-minute span when they scored 3 goals. They were playing a team in Columbus that this stat blew me away. The Blue Jackets in October beat the Rangers at Madison Square Garden 5-1. 12 players that dressed for them that night, including both goalies, were not in the lineup or dressed for the Blue Jackets last night. They were playing Trey Fix-Wolanski was playing his 12th game. Hunter McCown was playing his 3rd game. Billy Sweezy was playing his 2nd game. In the NHL, I'm talking about. The Rangers didn't know who these guys were. They knew who Boone Jenner is. They know who Johnny Gaudreau is, right? I mean, obvious, those guys they know, but they didn't know this team. Michael Hutchinson was in net, right? They don't know him. And they scored bang, bang, bang. 3 goals, take a 3-0 lead. And you look like, oh boy, here they're just going to run. But they weren't good in the first period. And then the Blue Jackets come back and they win three. They make it 3-2. And then the Rangers settled in and they played better. And it was like the ultimate, honestly, it was the ultimate get through it game. Like they just had to get through it because they know how big this is for them now Thursday. Going into New Jersey, playing the Devils. Like I said, 9-1-1, the Rangers in their past 11 games. The Devils 2-4-2. In their past 8 games. The Rangers, I think, are licking their chops here to play the Devils. They're catching them at the right time, and it's an opportunity to catch them, period. Because if the Rangers go into New Jersey and they win in regulation at Prudential Center, they take over second place. They'll be even in points and even in games played, but the Rangers will have one more regulation win, and that's the tiebreaker, right? So they take over second place. A couple of weeks ago, you asked me about, you know, you looked at the Rangers, and like you said, before Kane arrived, there were these weird lineups that they were icing, you know, guys that were dressing but not playing. Then after he gets there, you know, they can't seem to put it together. Looks now like they finally got their lines that they like together. They'd like to get Ryan Lindgren back in the lineup, but they're looking good. I think Shesterkin's playing the best he's played all season, which may be the biggest thing going for the Rangers right now. So I think they definitely are licking their chops to go in there and play the Devils right now. And it's really interesting. It could be, we could say likely is going to be a first round matchup, Rangers-Devils. But the Rangers keep playing the way they're playing. And Carolina keeps struggling to score a little bit. I'm not counting it out that the Rangers can make up the 5 points and finish first in the division.
That's a big ask.
It is a huge ask. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I don't think you can count it out.
No, you can't count it out. But look, the Devils' problem is they have a goaltender going for 30 wins in Vitek Vanacek. He'd be the first one. He'd be the only one other than Marty Brodeur, who did it 972 times. He'd be the only goalie in franchise history to win 30 games, which is unbelievable.
That is shocking.
Should have been Chris Torreri, by the way.
Sean Burke never did 30 wins?
No.
Wow.
And he's not playing well. You know, we just talked to Paul Maurice about Bobrovsky. We talked about Hellebuck a little earlier. Like, you start using these guys as workhorses, and you know, he's played more games than he's ever played. I think he's at 48 now, and the most he ever played was 42, and he still has, you know, several games left in the regular season that he's probably going to play, and however long the playoffs last. He has not been great. He's been fighting the puck. He's not been the player he was before, and the Devils have lost some confidence. They were also missing Nate Bastian, and look, that kid's a waiver pickup. They lost him to Seattle. They got him back. He's really important to them. He generates a lot of stuff for them. You know, he's gritty around the net. They've had trouble scoring since he's been gone. He's way more important than you would think he would be. But they need to find some answers. The one thing I like about the Devils is they'll skate rings around the New York Rangers. They will skate the New York Rangers into the ground. They've done it when they've played in the past. The Rangers have had a horrible time trying to deal with the Devil's speed, and without Lindgren, it becomes that much harder. So that's the one area I like, is that they can skate. But that's going to be fine on Thursday night. Not going to be as good in the playoffs when you're not allowed to skate.
Well, and that's an interesting point, because I was actually having this conversation with someone the other day. I was wondering, like, what are the Devils going to be when they get into the playoffs? Right? Are they going to be this team that has been really good all year, but doesn't have the playoff experience and kind of tightens up a little bit and loses the reason why they're there, right? Which is that skating, which is that ability to turn a puck over at the defensive blue line and just attack, right? Or are they going to be the team that's just naive, doesn't care where it is, and just plays? And if it's the Rangers that they play in the first round, the Rangers are happy to go up and down the ice. That's their game too. You know, they want to go up and down the ice. So I actually think it might be a series, if they play a series in the playoffs, that is up and down the ice. That isn't a grind necessarily, because neither one of those two teams want to necessarily play that way. But if the Devils were to go up against the Islanders, per se, let's say if they go out and they win the division, they play the Islanders, I think it'll actually, the Devils could tighten up, because that's the way the Islanders want to play. You know, so it might be harder to dictate that type of play, but against the Rangers, they want to kind of both want to go up and down the ice, which is it's interesting. Although the experience factor and the goaltending factor is huge. And like I said, Shesterkin's at the top of his game right now. It's taken a while for him to get there this season, but he's there now. And if he can stay there for the rest of the regular season, it's going to make the Rangers that much harder to play against in the playoffs, because they are prone to the mistake. They are prone to the turnover, the giveaway, the bad read in the defensive zone, because they are like the team that wants to go, right? And he's the equalizer. He's the one that stops it. Whereas Vanacek can't really believe that he's going to be able to do it as much as Shesterkin's going to be able to do it.
It doesn't matter what your DNA is. Like, there's just less space in the playoffs.
True.
Yeah. And you know, that's what happened to the Florida Panthers. Again, you know, we just talked to Paul Maurice last year. They ran and gunned all over the place. 7 goals. They came back a couple of times against the Devils from like 4 goal deficits, and you know, just laughed at it and said, "Oh, we'll put up 7, no problem." And then all of a sudden, they played the Tampa Bay Lightning in the playoffs, and they couldn't generate anything, and they went ice cold, and they got frustrated, and that was it. End of your season. Like, that's, I don't think the Devils are going to be intimidated by the surroundings. I just don't know if they have that low gear to get into.
Yeah.
Like, they can race down the highway all you want, but then when you got to climb a mountain and you got to put it into low and you're tugging, you know, an RV behind you, like, I don't know that they have that in them. Like, I don't know that they can play a grinded out game over and over every second night for 7 games yet. Like, I think that's something you learn. It's something Tampa Bay had to learn. It's something every team's had to learn.
Yeah. No, it's true. Florida's going through it, right? We just talked to Maurice about that. Quick question about the Devils, though, and I got this question from my mailbag. Luke Hughes. Luke Hughes is playing for Michigan still. They're in the Frozen Four, the semifinals. If they lose in the semifinals to Quinnipiac, he could sign and play a maximum of 3 regular season games before the playoffs. If they win go to the finals, he could sign and play a maximum of two. That's just the way the Devils' schedule breaks out versus when the Frozen Four is. You think Luke Hughes becomes an impact in any way for the Devils, not necessarily in the regular season, but in the playoffs, in the similar nature of the way Cale Makar did for the Avalanche, or go back 11 years, 12 years to Chris Kreider, the way he did for the Rangers? What do you think? I mean, do you think the Devils would go that route with Luke Hughes?
I don't know if they would. I don't know that they need to.
Right.
He's a repetitive player for them.
Right. He doesn't answer the question you were just saying. Right?
They have Dougie Hamilton, who's got 70, who's going to have 70 points. Like, that's who Luke Hughes is. That's who Luke Hughes is going to be. Like, you're going to throw him to the Wolves after two games in the Garden and say, here you go. Like, and not gain anything from it. Like, if he was a shutdown physical defenseman and you're like, well, we're really missing that. Or if Dougie Hamilton wasn't there, or God forbid Dougie Hamilton got hurt, then you might be like, oh, here's my solution. But now you're just repeating a skill set that you already have. I think Cale Makar was different because he was something that Colorado didn't have on the back end. And he brought something that was important to them. Look, Luke Hughes, from everything I've seen, is going to be fantastic. I just don't know that the Devils need him right now. They need different things.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that also with the way they've gone through the course of this season, they've established chemistry with their decor. I don't know that they want to break that up at this point in the season either. You know, and if he plays in two regular season games, that's certainly not enough for him to prepare. And by the way, those two regular season games, or three, could really be meaningful in getting home ice advantage or potentially first place in the division and all of that. So, I agree with you. And that's what I kind of wrote in the mailbag. I liked what you said about the repetitive player. I didn't do that. I didn't write that. It makes a lot of sense. What I wrote was just, I don't know that they want to break up what they have, what's worked. They're a 100-point team right now. And Luke Hughes has never played a National Hockey League. I think he's going to be great. I think he's going to be great. And I think he's going to be a top six defenseman for them next season, right? Does not have to be this season. So interesting. Good stuff there with the Devils and Rangers. Big game coming up Thursday night. Another one I wanted to get to. We'll go out west, Sean. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Has anybody ever had a quieter 100-point season than this guy? He's got 96 points after getting five in the 7-4 win against Vegas. All we talk about is McDavid. And then we talk about Draisaitl. And then we talk about, is Stuart Skinner good enough? What's going on with Jack Campbell? When do we get to Ryan Nugent-Hopkins?
Right now.
Here we go.
This is when we get to Ryan Nugent-Hopkins.
You know, only on March 29th of the season that he's got almost 100 points in already.
By the way, I don't want to toot my own horn too much, but if you go to NHL.com today, big feature on Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Emily Benjamin wrote it. My idea.
Your idea.
My idea. Ran it last night to promote the TNT game. 5 points.
Yeah, good stuff.
Who looks smarter than me?
Nobody.
Other than Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. I mean, this is the player that they've always waited for, right? He was considered kind of a bust for a while. They'll be the first team since the Powerhouse Penguins back in the day with Mario and Jagr to have 300-point scorers if Nugent-Hopkins gets there. And he might only need one more game at the rate he's going to get there. So, I mean, we're talking about things that haven't been accomplished in 30 years. So good on him to finally break out. And he, unfortunately, because he plays with Draisaitl and McDavid, he's still in the shadows, but I don't think he'll complain.
No, I don't think he'll complain. It kind of fits his personality too. But the other thing about Nugent-Hopkins, that he's going to be a 100-point player, that he's smart. This is not a knock on McDavid or Draisaitl. No, I'm not saying that, but he's so smart in the defensive zone. He's so smart with his stick. He's creating offense and he's creating production and these points off of turnovers too. And that's a key part of this, I think, for the Oilers. And if they're going to make a run here, we've always said it can't just be on the backs of McDavid and Draisaitl and their offense. They tried to do that last year, and obviously they ran into a brick wall in the Colorado Avalanche. They got there to the Western Conference Final on the backs of McDavid and Draisaitl, but then they had no shot against the Avalanche. They not only need more guys contributing, and they can have that now with Nugent-Hopkins and Hyman and Kane and others, but the defensive play, the good stick, the breaking up a play in the defensive zone and turning it up into the offensive zone, that's a key thing for the Oilers to be able to generate offense off of their defense, not just generate offense off of their elite skill. If they could keep the puck out of the net because of their goaltending, they could be a legitimate team make a legitimate run here. And it's another thing we talked about it in the Central. It's a top, right? You want to finish first. You want to finish first in the Pacific too, because you don't want to be in that 2-3 matchup where you're going to potentially have to, it could be potentially Vegas LA if Edmonton continues on this run that they're on, but you certainly don't want to be in that matchup where you're going to be playing McDavid, Dreisaitl, and Nugent Hopkins, and Hyman, and Kane, and Nurse, and these guys. They're better now, as long as they can keep the puck out of the net.
Yeah, well, what they need is they need Evander Kane to be better.
Scored his 300th.
Yeah. But he hasn't been good. I mean, ever since he's been injured, like it takes a long time to come back. And, you know, they need that depth. They need that ability to scare teams with other lines other than, you know, the McDavid line. And to do that, they need Evander Kane to be where he was last year. And I don't think he's there yet. You know, defensively, they're much better. Ekholm has been a revelation to some people, not to me.
No, you know, he's great.
I thought he was great in Nashville and kind of like Nugent Hopkins. He was always overshadowed by Ellis and by Yossi and you know, whoever else was running through town. And he was just that quiet guy that you never noticed, which is exactly what you want from your defenseman, especially a shutdown defenseman. You never want to mention his name, right? Ryan McDonagh. Like, you never want to mention his name. You just, he's going to do it. And at the end of the game, you're going to be like, I didn't really notice him at all. Well, good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the only way you're going to notice him is when he messes up. They really need Evander Kane, and then they need good goaltending. I mean, they won 7-4 last night, but they gave up 4 goals.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I don't know that you can play 7-4 games in the playoffs and come out on the right end all the time, especially when you run into a good goaltender, when you're not on Vegas's fifth goaltender. You know, you run into a really hot goaltender, an auditor. I don't know if you're putting 7 by Jake every night.
Another reason why Dallas can be a very dangerous team, though he's played a ton of games too for him. He's not played this much. Look, interesting races and whatnot, but there's one team that's kind of, before we get out of here, there's one team that's obviously set where it's at, but it's interesting. How do you feel if you're the Columbus Blue Jackets right now? You're coming off a 6-2 loss at Madison Square Garden after an 8-2 loss against the Montreal Canadiens. You're rolling into Boston Thursday night. And the Boston Bruins, coming off of a home loss, mind you, can win the President's Trophy that night. They can set a new team record for wins in a season that night. And they can move with just inch closer to the NHL record. They need 6 wins in their last 8 games to get the NHL record for most wins in a season, which is to get to 63. How do you feel if you're the Blue Jackets going into that? You know, especially when you're talking about the Bruins coming off of a loss.
You're excited.
Yeah, you got to be pumped, right? Why not?
You're excited. Here's your opportunity, just like Nashville, right? You have an opportunity to kind of say, well, this is who we are. This is who we can be. This is what we're going to learn. But the one thing I know about the Boston Bruins is they won't take Columbus lightly. They won't pull a Winnipeg playing San Jose and say, here's a team that's out of the playoffs that wants to draft Connor Bedard. Mm-hmm. We can just go out and give a half effort and go home with a win. Like the Bruins, A, they'll be smarting from a loss, and B, the culture there is so strong that they almost never put together back-to-back losses. So they'll be hungry for blood.
Yeah, and they can clinch the President's Trophy, which some will argue you don't want, but I will argue that you win as many games as you possibly can, get the best seed you can possibly get, and then go into the playoffs and take your chances. I don't think President's Trophy curse is a thing. Teams have lost, obviously, in the first round. I think it's 7 teams have lost in the first round after winning the President's Trophy. We'll see with Boston. I don't necessarily think I would predict that to happen to them, but they can also set a team record for wins, as I mentioned. I almost did this. I was going to do this for the Super 16 this week, but I want to save it, John. It's a question of, for the other 15 teams that we have in our Super 16, to answer the question of, can they beat Boston in the playoffs? And for Boston to write about them, it would be, could they possibly lose a 7-game series? So I want to wait on that until, you know, as we're really down to it, getting very close, probably the last Super 16 we run before the playoffs start. But do you think the Bruins could lose a 7-game series? I mean, yeah. Would you pick the Bruins to lose a 7-game series?
Well, it depends where we are in the playoffs and how hurt they are and how things have proceeded. But yeah, I could see myself picking them to lose against the Tampa Bay. for sure. That might be the only team in the East that I would do that for, especially the state that Carolina's in right now. And then out West, if they play Colorado, I could see them losing. But here's a bigger question for you before we go, and we got to get out of here because we're getting the wrap-up signal. Do you chase the six wins, or do you start sitting people down?
Well, they already kind of started sitting people down, right?
I know, but more. You got the President's Trophy. There's nothing left to play for. You have everything. No. Do you chase? Do you go all out, or do you coast a little bit into the playoffs, even in game? Even like, so let's say you play Marchand and you play Bergeron and you're down by a goal. Do you ride those guys trying to win games, or do you just let it play out at this point?
You play the way that you've played all season. The moment you start to change is the moment things go sideways. Play the way you've played all season because it's worked. And you have to have the belief that it will continue to work. You don't want to have a regret going into the playoffs and say, oh, we're not playing that great. You look, Tampa Bay, go back to 2019. It's lost in it, right? They were not playing well in the last 13, 14 games of their season. They were dominant all year. They didn't play well down the stretch of the regular season. They took a 3-0 lead in game one, thought they could coast, and never came close again. Don't change the way you play. If you have a guy that's nicked up, banged up, fine. You want to rest him because of an injury? Fine. But rest him because of an injury like you would have rested him in November too, because of an injury. Don't change the way you play.
Okay.
You disagree?
No. I agree wholeheartedly. I just think I'm in the minority at this point. I think load management is here in the NHL, and it's probably here to stay because everybody copies everybody else, and that's where it is in other places and other sports. You know, that's one of the reasons the NFL wants so much parity is they don't want a runaway team who, for the last 4 weeks of the season, is thinking about sitting guys out. They want to see full rosters all the time. But I think if you get teams like the Bruins in the future, especially if something bad happens to them this playoffs, you're going to see coaches start to think and managers start to think, look, we already had it with trade-related reasons for players sitting out. I just think you're going to see more and more of it. Oh, well, we've won everything we can. There's no place for us to go. I'm going to give Patrice Bergeron 2 games off.
Nope. We don't take off on this podcast. They shouldn't take off on their games, right? We bring it every week. There's no off days. Why do they get one?
I don't know. I'm playing hurt.
Speechless hurt. Almost there.
I played hurt this week, so yeah. Little under the weather, but it's playoff time, and you give your all, and Bones isn't going to have to yell at me.
No, he isn't.
I'm not dreaming.
Good stuff. You did play hurt, a little under the weather. You made it through. We made it through. We thank Paul Maurice, head coach of the Florida Panthers, for joining us. A lot of good hockey left here down the stretch. A lot of good races. Enjoy it. Enjoy the hockey.